Welcome to Wisdom Trek with Gramps. Wisdom is the final frontier in gaining true knowledge. Our mission is to create a legacy of wisdom, to seek out discernment and insights, and to boldly grow where few have chosen to grow before. Hello, my friend. This is Gramps. Thanks for coming along on our journey to increase wisdom and create a living legacy. Today is day 1571 of our trek, and it is Worldview Wednesday. Creating a biblical worldview is essential to have a proper perspective on today's current events. To establish a biblical worldview, you must have a proper understanding of God and His Word. This week, we will continue reviewing a book from Dr. Michael S. Heiser titled Supernatural. The book is an abbreviated version of his more comprehensive book, The Unseen Realm. I highly recommend both of these books. Creating a biblical worldview based on how the Old and New Testament connect with God's overall plan for humanity is essential in our lives. This book review will help us to understand what the Bible teaches about the unseen world and why it matters. And today's chapter title is called The Cloud Rider. We close the last chapter by noting how Jesus began to talk about his death immediately after baiting the powers of darkness at the gates of hell and Mount Hermon. The challenge was set in motion, a string of events that would lead to the Lord's trial and his death on the cross. Christians have read about the trial of Jesus many times, but there is a supernatural backdrop to it that is frequently overlooked. To understand what finally draws the death sentence from the Jewish authorities and the transfer of Jesus to Pontius Pilate in order to carry it out, we have to go back to the Old Testament book of Daniel, to a meeting God holds with his heavenly host, his divine council. And in this, we see the Ancient of Days and his council. Daniel chapter 7 begins with a strange vision. Daniel sees four beasts coming out of the sea, Daniel chapter 7 verses 1 through 8, and they're all freakish. But the fourth beast is the worst. In the dreams interpreted in the Old Testament, both objects and living things always represent something. And in this dream, the four beasts in Daniel's visions are four empires. We know this because the vision aligns with the themes of Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 2, which was about Babylon and the three other empires to follow. Our focus, though, is what Daniel describes next in Daniel chapter 7 verses 9 and 10. Let me read that. I watched as the thrones were put in place, and the ancient one sat down to judge. His clothing was as white as snow, and his hair like purest wool. He sat on a fiery throne with wheels of blazing fire, and a river of fire was pouring out, flowing from his presence. Millions of angels ministered to him. Many millions stood to attend him. Then the court began its session, and the books were open. We know that the Ancient of Days is the God of Israel. That's pretty easy to determine, especially if we compare his throne description to Ezekiel's vision of God's throne in Ezekiel chapter 1. The fire, wheels, and human form on the throne in that vision are the same as in Daniel's vision. But did you notice there isn't just one throne? There are many thrones in Daniel's vision, Daniel chapter 7 verse 9. There were enough thrones for the divine court, God's council, Daniel chapter 7 verse 10. The heavenly court is meeting to decide the fate of the beast, the empires, in this vision. It is decided that the fourth beast must be killed by the other beasts rendered powerless, Daniel chapter 7 verses 11 and 12. Another king and kingdom will displace them. And that's where things get even more interesting, because in the next segment we see the Son of Man who comes on the clouds. Daniel continued narrating his vision in Daniel chapter 7 verses 13 and 14. As my vision continued that night, I saw something like the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient One and was led into his presence. He was given authority, honor, and sovereignty over all the nations of the world, so that the people of every race and nation and language would obey him. His rule was eternal. It will never end. His kingdom will never be destroyed. I think you may be getting the picture. Son of Man is a phrase that's used many times in the Old Testament. It should be of no surprise that it speaks of a human. The surprise is how else this human is described in this passage. Daniel chapter 7 verse 13 describes a man coming on the clouds to the Ancient of Days. Why is this a big deal? Because everywhere else that description occurs in the Old Testament, it was used only for God himself. In Isaiah chapter 19, Deuteronomy chapter 32, Psalm chapter 68, and Psalm chapter 104. But in Daniel chapter 7, God is already on the scene as the Ancient of Days. It is as if, in his vision, Daniel sees a second God who is also a man, something like the way Christians believe in God as more than one person. And that's precisely the point. As Jesus stood before Caiaphas at his trial in Matthew chapter 26, verses 59 through 66, his life was hanging in the balance, and he hit a nerve by appealing to this idea. Let me read that passage. Inside, the leading priest and the entire council were trying to find witnesses who could lie about Jesus so that they could put him to death. Even though they found many who agreed to give false witness, they could not use anyone's testimony. Finally, two men came forward and declared, "This man said, 'I am able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days.'" Then the high priest stood up and said to Jesus, "Well, aren't you going to answer these charges? What do you have to say for yourself?" But Jesus remained silent. Then the high priest said to him, "I demand in the name of the living God, tell us if you are the Messiah, the Son of God." Jesus replied, "You have said it. And in the future you will see the Son of Man seated in the place of power at God's right hand and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the priest tore his clothes to show his horror and said, "Blasphemy! Why do we need other witnesses? You have all heard his blasphemy. What is your verdict?" "Guilty," they shouted. "He deserves to die." In what seemed like a pointless answer to a straightforward question, Jesus quoted Daniel chapter 7, verse 13 in response to Caiaphas. It was as if he said, "Do you really want to know who I am, Caiaphas? Listen carefully." The reaction is immediate. Caiaphas understood in an instant that Jesus was claiming to be the second God figure of Daniel chapter 7, verse 13, the human who was described in a way only God was described in the Old Testament. He was claiming to be God in human form. That was blasphemy and grounds for a death sentence. But Jesus, of course, knew that. He had no interest in protecting himself. He knew that he must die to restore God's kingdom, to bring believers into God's family, and to reclaim the nations from the evil principality and powers who controlled the nations God rejected at Babel. And die he did. Psalm chapter 22, well known for how it describes the physical effects of crucifixion through David's words, gives us a glimpse of horrors unseen at the cross. The suffering psalmist moans in Psalm chapter 22, verses 7 through 14. "Everyone who sees me mocks me. They sneer and shake their head, saying, 'Is this the one who relies on the Lord? Then let the Lord save him. If the Lord loves him so much, let the Lord rescue him. Yet you brought me safely from my mother's womb and led me to trust you at my mother's breast. I was thrust into your arms at my birth. You have been my God from the moment I was born. Do not stray far from me, for trouble is near, and no one else can help me. My enemies surround me like a herd of bulls. Fierce bulls of Bashan have hemmed me in. Like lions, they open their jaws against me, roaring and tearing into their prey. My life is poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax, melting within me." Now, the creepy part in this segment of Psalms is the description of the fierce bulls of Bashan. As we noted earlier, in Old Testament times, Bashan was ground zero for demonic gods and the realm of the dead. The area was a leading center for worship of Baal, symbolized by bulls and cows. Bulls from the land of Bashan is a reference to demons, the powers of darkness. In more of a modern time, this imagery was captured in all its eerie repulsion by C.S. Lewis when he wrote The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. No one who has read this book or seen the movie can forget Aslan humbly surrendering his life to the delighted hordes of the White Witch on the stone tablet. And just as Jesus had utterly outwitted Satan, Aslan had played the White Witch for a fool. What evil misperceived as a moment of triumph turned out to be their own irreversible defeat. It was God telling the principalities of darkness that you are gods, but you will die like men. Satan's loss of his claim over the lives of Adam's children was not the only loss he suffered at the cross. His cohorts in rebellion, the supernatural gods or Elohim of the nations, would see their domains begin to vanish. The supernatural gods had been assigned to those nations by the Most High, the God of Israel, Deuteronomy chapter 4 and Deuteronomy chapter 32. We are not told when these supernatural gods became enemies of the Most High God, but they did. They had turned God's own people, Israel, away from worshiping him to instead sacrifice to them. Psalm 82, the psalm that we looked at in chapter 2 to introduce the divine council, tells us that these Elohim abuse their power and rewarded evil. They have no care for God's law or justice. Let me read Psalm 82 verses 1 through 5. God presides in the heavenly council. In the assembly of the gods, Elohim, he gives his decision. You must stop judging unjustly. You must no longer be partial to the wicked. Defend the rights of the poor and the orphans. Be fair to the needy and the helpless. Rescue them from the power of evil people. How ignorant you are. How stupid. You are completely corrupt, and justice has disappeared from the world. The rest of the psalm tells us that God had called this heavenly council meeting to tell the gods that their future was bleak. Their reign of terror would end when God decided to reclaim the nation. And this is Psalm chapter 82, verses 6 through 8. You are gods, I said. All of you are the children of the Most High. But you will die like mortals. Your life will end like that of any prince. Come, O God, and rule the world. All the nations are yours. When would God decide to reclaim the nations? Well, we read the answer earlier in Daniel chapter 7, verse 14. He was given authority, honor, and royal power so that the people of all nations, races, and languages would serve him. His authority would last forever, and his kingdom would never end. The messaging of Daniel chapter 7, verses 13 and 14 is clear. When the Son of Man receives a kingdom, it will be the beginning of the end for the supernatural powers of darkness. Jesus received the kingdom at his resurrection. Ephesians chapter 1, verses 20 and 21 says that God raised Christ from the dead and seated him at his right side in the heavenly world. Christ rules there above all heavenly rulers, authorities, powers, and lords. He has a title superior to all titles of authority in this world and in the next. And next we must look at why this matters. Before the cross, Satan had eternal claims on our souls. All humans die and go to the realm of the dead, his domain. There we would remain, were it not for the sacrifice of Jesus and his resurrection. Through faith and his work on the cross, we are raised with him. As we saw in the previous chapter, Satan was expelled from God's presence when the kingdom began on earth, Luke chapter 10, verse 18. God would have no more of his accusations against the believers. He had no more right to our souls. So the question is, why then do we live as though he does? Salvation is not gained by moral perfection. It is a gift that comes by grace through faith, Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 and 9. That in turn means that salvation cannot be lost by moral imperfection. What is not at all gained by performance cannot be lost by poor performance. Salvation is about believing loyalty, trusting what Jesus did to defeat Satan's claim, and turning from all other gods and the belief systems of which they are a part. This is God's kingdom message that we are commissioned to tell all the nations, Matthew chapter 28, verses 19 and 20. And as we obey this commission, the dominions of the enemy gods, the principalities and powers shrink, soul by soul, moment by moment. The gates of hell, the realm of the dead, do not withstand the resurrection and will not withstand the advance of the gospel. At the time of Jesus' crucifixion, though, none of this seemed real to the disciples, but they would soon get the message in a dramatic, unforgettable way. And that will finish our study for this week's Worldview Wednesday. Join us again next week as we continue with the next chapter in Supernatural in our quest to build our biblical worldview. Tomorrow we will ponder another bit of wisdom from Gramps. So encourage your friends and family to join us and to come along with us tomorrow for another day of Wisdom Trek, Creating a Legacy. If you'd like to listen to any of the past 1,570 treks or read the Wisdom Journal, they are all available at wisdom-trek.com. And I encourage you to subscribe to Wisdom Trek on your favorite podcast player so that each day's trek will be downloaded to you automatically. And thank you so much for allowing me to be your guide, your mentor. But most importantly, I am your friend as I serve you through the Wisdom Trek podcast and journal each day. And as we take this trek of life together, let us always live abundantly. Love unconditionally, listen intentionally, learn continuously, lend to others generously, lead with integrity, and leave a living legacy each day. I am Guthrie Chamberlain, reminding you to keep moving forward Enjoy your journey and create a great day every day. See you tomorrow.